Media here and around the world are losing ground amid the shifting sands of public distrust. Gaining ground are those willing to buck convention to give viewers what they want to hear and need to hear. Today's guest, veteran reporter, TV personality, and businesswoman Bianca De La Garza, is one of those journalists. After Emmy Award-nominated work at TV stations across America, she's now one of Newsmax's rising stars as she covers the news with wisdom, personality, and a drive to give people a perspective on what it all means. Because as Bob Dylan once sang, the times, they are a-changing. Coming to you from Ballard Studios in Florida, it's 13th and Park.
We give you information, not a panic attack.
I mean, look what's going on. I mean, my God.
This was it. My kids were gonna die.
That time is gone forever.
This is the biggest story in America.
We weren't prepared for this.
Don't you want to speak truth to power?
Toughest thing I ever had to do.
So, Bianca, welcome to the show. I had to keep rereading your resume to figure out how did you put all of that in to half a life, which you've led, right? As opposed to a full life. It's unbelievable. And I just get this feeling you're just warming up.
First, you're very kind and an honor to join you today. Congratulations on all your success. To be part of the curated people you have on the show is really an honor. I think we're getting warmed up. I think the country's getting warmed up. I mean, this is, you know, critical times we're living in, and everyone's sort of awake and firing on all cylinders. At least we are here over at Newsmax for sure.
So give us, let's start there. Give us your take on 2024. I mean, we're only in March. It feels like we're almost in November, but we're way away. Tell us how you see this kind of playing out, because you have a lot of people coming through your show and on Newsmax that are going to be real pivotal players on exactly how this script will be written.
Obviously, right now, it's going to be, you know, Biden-Trump, right? And so here's the matchup of all matchups. And when we look at sort of what's unfolding, I think Americans have started to realize the weaponization, the disinformation campaigns, and sort of the infringement on the values that they love. And, you know, now it really is, I think, at a point where the vote isn't just, I'm going to vote Democratic, I'm going to vote Republican. It's like, I'm going to vote my values. And that's something at Newsmax we talk a lot about, which I don't think anyone else is really doing. They tell us the economy is good. It's not. They tell us our streets are safe. They're not. They tell us our border is closed. It's not. We are in an information war like none other. And I think it's good versus evil. And viewers need to up their discernment and be on the right side.
You've been in media for a very long time. You spent a lot of your career in local television, where you covered a lot of incredible storylines.
Yeah.
Graduate of Emerson College in Boston, which is the home of Jay Leno,
yeah,
the Fonz, Henry Winkler, Norman Mailer, and now Bianca. So how do you see the now media, and what can media do to be more effectively communicating and trusted by the people that they're addressing?
I am an eternal optimist, but I was schooled in the school of true journalism, which is transparency and honesty and the voice for the voiceless. And, you know, when you're trained in that, and I was so blessed to start my career covering politics in New York and Albany and seeing how the machine sort of works, going out west to California, covering issues of the border, which are so different than the border we have today. There's no turning back to like the traditional media, nor that I do think we have to. But I think, to your point, I think the pendulum is swinging. And I think we're at an inflection point where people do not trust the media, and with good cause. If you're watching MSNBC, if you're watching CNN, there is gaslighting. There is covering up for Joe Biden. It's so blatant now that I think that the blessing is, the silver lining is, that there are alternative media sources. And then there's also trustworthy news sources out there. So I think in a weird way, media, Adam, is forever changed. But I think that people are finding the voices that are still out there. We may be a dying breed, but we're here and we're fighting.
It's interesting. This will age me, of course, and I deserve to be aged. You know, I go back to the days of Walter Cronkite and Eric Severide and Harry Reasoner and some of the greats, right? Where it's just the facts, man. Throw it out there and let the American people make the judgment about what to do with it. Today seems to be driven much more by opinion than it is maybe hard news. But back in your career, you did some incredible reporting, what you did in San Diego. and all the stories that percolated on or near the border, including that incredible investigative piece you did on the factory where immigrants were being literally locked up at night in the factory. Did that change your opinion at all about how you look at immigration, which, of course, is trending as one of the hot button issues of the cycle?
It did. And also, you know, people don't realize that all the time, but my family immigrated legally from Mexico, my grandparents. So when I was in San Diego, we were watching the border and people were coming over there being locked into a sweatshop, cheap labor, right? And the feds came in and closed it down as a result of that report. But when I used to cover the border then, these people were afraid to get captured by the Border Patrol. They were like going in the cover of darkness. I went out to Arizona through the Yuma sector. Like everyone was scared of Border Patrol. And now when I'm down there and I've been to Roma in the past year and a half and McAllen, they're just like, come on in, they're processing centers. So, I mean, our immigration system is, we have a porous open border and now it's going to lead to, you know, tragically, I think, deaths. Lakin Riley's case, you know, has obviously sparked so much heartache for people. I have an 18-year-old daughter who's going off to college. She goes out for a jog like Lakin Riley. I mean, Americans really are looking at immigration saying, yes, we were built on immigrants, but we can't just have an open border. If you go to Canada, they're going to check your ID.
Right.
Full stop. The immigration issue is huge right now. And as you said, I've been fortunate to cover some other big stories and it'll age me too, though. So I don't know if we want to go there. But yes, I remember getting phone calls in the middle of the night. We captured Osama bin Laden. We're going there. 9/11, a very powerful story for me as well, as my mother was a flight attendant for American Airlines. And it was my second day back after moving back from San Diego to Boston. And the second day was 9/11. And she used to fly flight 11. And going into work that morning, I wasn't sure if she was on one of those planes. So as you can imagine, the journalist in me, you know, having to wear one hat, but also knowing I'm about to embark on one of the biggest stories of the nation, i.e. world, and not knowing if my mother could be among those who perished. So, you know, a lot of things over the decades. And that's why I'm so proud of what we're doing here at Newsmax, Adam. I really feel like this is real journalism. To do it feels really good. And people realize when it's not.
A first responder of information. You're one of the first in to give people some information on things that can be very, very emotional, very, very uncertain, very changing by the minute. And I look at, you know, your resume of all the things you've covered, you know, the shoe bomber, Richard Reed, the Boston Marathon situation. Do you have to have a sense of cool when you kind of get on location to be able to not only get the story right, but to be able to communicate it in a way that people are not only getting information, but inspiration to do something with it?
That's a really great question. I think that as the, you know, when you get there, you have to assess the situation. You have to get the right information. You have to synthesize it very quickly. And one thing that I've been really fortunate to do is, although there's been so much heavy news, there's been moments of levity and light things that I've been able to cover as well. And that's helpful too, because I do think people need to see some hope in the world and some light. And I think when you say, what can people do with it? You know, information is power. Information allows you to make educated decisions. People right now, I talk to people almost every day, probably you do too, where they're like, I don't watch the news anymore. I don't want to know what's going on. They want to stick their head in the sand. And I think that is somewhat frightening, because those are the people that you don't want to be, you know, left in the dark and not realizing the gravity of the situation. So I encourage more people to get involved and younger people to come to this field, because you don't have to be a spewer of disinformation.
So let's talk about Newsmax.
And welcome in, everybody. I'm Bianca Della Garza. There's a freight train coming. The greatest terror threat posed in the United States today, our southern border is being invaded.
You have a real brand going there, and Chris Ruddy and the rest of the team there should get a lot of credit for having the courage to do what you're doing. What is it about Newsmax when you get on set that you know you're going to be a part of something just a little different than the fare that people would get anywhere else?
It is pretty remarkable. I mean, Chris is a very visionary type person who saw this, built this, and now we see the momentum and the shift. I think the special sauce is a little bit about things we're able to tackle as subjects that you don't hear anywhere else. So you're flicking through and you're like, oh, wait, these people are, they're talking about God. They're talking about Jesus, spiritual warfare. Oh, wait, they're talking about influence peddling and Biden. They're calling things out. They're really laying out, you know, a case here that's logical and factual, not just hyperbole and scaring us, you know. So I think there is a real thirst for truth, and Newsmax just has always been that constant to provide it. One thing I'm really amazed by, we obviously watch and track what's going on, but Adam, we are number one in cable news for length of tune in between people 35 to 64. And that means when they come to us and they watch us, they stay with us. It really is too, like our people, like we have some amazing people. Chris is curated at the station here and we have incredible hosts. I have an incredible team working with me at Newsline every day and they're in it just as well. And their hearts are pure. Our intentions are pure and you can't fight that.
So try to connect the dots for my audience here, because you went from a frontline reporter and anchor in local television news to late night where you had incredible success, to a cosmetics company as an entrepreneur that had incredible success, then forward to Newsmax.
Yeah.
Connect those pieces for us.
You know, it's hard because every story I've ever covered, it is so personal to me. I know like doctors can go on a surgical table and people are like, you know, you have a surgery, you go home at night and it's like, okay, that person didn't do well. You can't as a journalist. You go home and your mind's racing and you're thinking about, you know, what you reported on. It becomes part of your cellular DNA, right? Like you absorb this when you're talking about these stories. It becomes, you know, your words you're speaking, they're very powerful. So after 20 years, I did need to sort of take a moment. And I also didn't like the culture of the media. I thought it was very anti-American and I didn't want to play that role anymore. And so I was at the height of my career and people were like, are you sure you want to do this? I was doing 20 hours of live television at the number one station in New England, racking up Emmy nominations. And I was like, yeah, I want to go away. And one of my bosses was like, are you okay? Like, I said, yeah, I'm going to be fine. And, you know, for me, I've always had that entrepreneurial streak. I think it comes from my family being conquistadors. We're like very like go out and conquer and there's no land out there, but we're just going to go and see what we find. And I was always a curious person. So to your point, I launched a late night show. I went to do something completely different. I needed to do something lighter. I was very fortunate to do a partnership with Sony Television and we were in 20 million homes. Up against SNL, counter programming, and SNL still wasn't funny then. So, I mean, it was still okay with that. I beat them a few times. They're still not funny now.
I have to ask though, Bianca, did you ever feel that you had to get some comedic lift into your routine at late night?
Yes.
Saturday Night Live?
I did stand up. I did an open mic for one of my segments on Sunset Boulevard. It was so frightening. Comedy is so hard. And I had to do an open mic for one of the segments. And I had some really great writers. But I got to interview some cool people like Slash was on my first show. Jackie Collins, the writer, I got to do the last interview with her before she passed away. And she's a really strong woman. And I think, too, at the end of the day, I say my daughter, who's now 18, she was very young at the time. And I think part of why I did that shift, although it was very risky as a single mother at the time to walk away from a very secure media job that people would have given their arm for, I didn't want her to see me doing something that wasn't in my heart. And she has really helped me as a mother be a role model for her and other young women. So I wanted her to see mom going for it. So do things that are out of your comfort zone. Write your own story. Be the author of your own story. If you don't like your life, you're not a victim. Shift it. And that's where I got the cosmetics beauty line idea, because for so many years, I was wearing all this heavy makeup and I was off news and I was like, I don't have to cover my face in spackle. And I just felt that women at the time were being kind of pushed. Young women were being pushed to this image, which was perfection, which is unattainable. And older women were being pushed to buy all these products because marketers were very savvy and we were going broke. So I was at that sweet spot where I kind of was young enough where I could feel for my younger daughter and social media, but old enough to say, hey, I'm not going to buy this and go broke because I'm already good enough. And so the whole experience, that was for about 5 years outside of news, doing these entrepreneurial things. It was an amazing chapter in my life. Then COVID hit, and I felt like this was time to get back into news and get back to my roots.
Of all the things I've read and seen of you through the years, this really moved my heart. When you said that cosmetics should be fun and playful, it shouldn't be something that makes women feel they're not good enough. That strikes right to the heart of self-esteem. I can only tell you, having read that as a guy, that must have motivated a lot of women just hearing that, beyond the cosmetics that your company was selling, which were natural and fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was vegan. It was quality products. You know, a lot of times you buy like a $180 cream and it's a $3 cream and they just upcharge it and it's all marketing. I wanted to reinforce the fact that, you know, and it is about self-esteem because women, it starts at a young age where it's like you play with Barbies or you're shown this in social media and you're supposed to be a certain way. And we all know it's Photoshopped. It's not real. So you end up getting on this hamster wheel where you're seeking outside, but it's all inside. And you ever see somebody, Adam, and they just smile and they're so beautiful. And you're like, you're so beautiful. Like, it's just an essence, right? It's just like something pure in someone's heart. And it's not just having a daughter who I wanted to sort of make sure she knew that this was, I saw younger women getting into plastic surgery and all that stuff. But it was also, again, for as I was aging too. And I was like, we're going to write our own narrative. You own your own story of beauty. Don't let anyone do it to you. And you're already beautiful. Before you put one thing on your face in the morning, just use your smile. You got it right there.
Beyond sales orders, you must have gotten a lot of reactions from women across America, maybe across the world, to just that thought.
I did. And I was able to go into Asia and speak to the culture there and speak to women. I was in Taiwan. I was in Shanghai. I was in Korea where they do a lot of makeup. They do like a 10-step beauty. You know, you don't need this because you just roll out of bed and you look handsome. I mean, come on. But there's a culture there where you need 10 steps. I mean, it's amazing. I don't even know how you have time to like get to car line if you're doing all these steps. And I was able to go to Mexico, of course, and speak to people, women of my culture. It was incredible to kind of go around the world getting, you know, women's stories. So I was really overwhelmed by the response and humbled by the response. And I think it connects us back to when you say connect the dots. At the end of the day, we're all human. We're all just trying to do the best we can. I happen to grow up in a very visual medium, so I know the pressure, but I also saw the pressure and I didn't want my daughter to feel it. And so what little part I can do to the conversation, that's my giving back. It's always like, how can I use my platform to do something positive? Yes, I have to report on negative stories even today, but how can I do something positive?
Your background seems to really inspire you to drive and drive hard and drive forward, right? That nothing's been given to you. You had to earn everything that you've reaped. But maybe that was one of the greatest things that happened to you in your life, that you had that kind of background, you had those kinds of parents, you had that kind of inspiration, which propelled you across many industries and many fields to where you are now.
This is the part of the emotional interview. You're doing your Barbara Walters. I feel it. I feel it. Yes, yes, yes. And yes, I agree with everything you just set up. Really astute observations. I was taught that you have to get an education and no one's going to give you anything and you have to work hard. So my work ethic, I believe, had helped me rise quickly among the ranks. I did get my first job a week before college. So when I was signing a contract in Market 50 in Albany and the general manager said, when did you graduate? And I'm signing the contract saying next week. He was shocked. But yeah, and I think that that's a great message. I think that working hard, you may feel like you're in a position where, you know, you don't love the situation you're in, you know, you don't love the job you're in, but you're never going to regret doing the best you can and having attention to detail. And I think also I'm a very spiritual person. And I think God notices that as well.
They talk about bedside manner with doctors and nurses, right? And how important that is in the healing process. In a way, you're in a parallel industry where a lot of people look to you and they're looking for something to hang on to. Not just the tough news, but a sense of motivation and hope that tomorrow just maybe could be a little bit better than today. Does that kind of drive you to, you're looking for those kinds of things that kind of power the heart as well as still the nerves?
I mean, we'd all be like crying in our closets if it was just bad news every day, right? We wouldn't want to get out of bed. It's heavy. Like in the past, you know, several days, we've seen so many stories break and it's one after another. So you can't just look towards the darkness and not recognize the light as well.
Is it true that your mom, who was a flight attendant, right?
Yes.
She'd be flying home to fix dinner for the family, right? There, she'd be somewhere, maybe in another country. And you're thinking, okay, when she comes home, mom will come home and fix dinner, but she's probably coming from, you know, half a world away. That is not a normal kind of upbringing.
It's not normal at all, but to me, it was all I knew. My mom would get on a plane, she'd go to another country, she'd come back, and she would, you know, be there at the dinner table and have dinner ready for me. That's dedication. That's like super mom hero status. So what it did for me was twofold. I never felt like the world was a big place.
Yeah.
I always felt like, well, you just get on a plane and you go and you come back. Like, that's not a big deal. So it connected me to be interested in other cultures. And it was the ethics and the work that, you know, you can have a career and also still be a fantastic mother. And you don't have to do one or the other. And she inspired me in so many ways. She really is my hero. And I love that I was able to kind of travel the world with her as well. She would take me with her as a very young child.
I really want to thank you for joining us on the show. I can tell you, I'm going to add one more descriptor beyond anchor, reporter, television personality, cosmetics, entrepreneur, great late show host. I'd add one more thing, and that would be the word mentor. And I really go back to what you said in this interview and how you said it so beautifully and from the heart to women everywhere, to make them feel the way they should feel, which is beautiful. And I can tell you there are a lot of people out there you're never going to meet who took those words and took that feeling and they live with that today. Good luck in the 2024 Derby. Who knows what's going to happen, but whatever's going to happen, I encourage people to go to Newsmax because they're probably going to be the first to know what's happening and why.
Adam, thank you so much. A true honor to spend some time with you and your viewers today. Thank you so much.
Remember to subscribe today and hit the bell so you never miss another episode of the show with that trademark opener from Washington, D.C. It's 13th and Park.